Good morning, Advocate Mtembu. Thank you very much for accepting the nomination to be considered as the new public protector. The way the process is going to go is that you are going to be given 10 minutes to present yourself, tell us who you are, tell us why you think this position is good. You are the best public protector. And the members of the committee will have the opportunity to ask you questions, and I would call on you to just relax and treat this process as seriously as you could, and also make sure that you make yourself very clear on the key critical aspects of your presentation that you would like to make about yourself. My name, I'm Mokosi Khoza. I am the chair of this committee. Because of time, I'm not going to be able to introduce all the members, but I am going to be telling you who they are. They will be introducing themselves when they are asking you a question. Thank you, sir. Your 10 minutes begin now, sir. Thank you.
My name is Mhlaliseni Michael Mtembu. I'm a South African citizen by birth. I was born and brought up at Mtubatuba. Let's begin. My name is Mhlaliseni Michael Mtembu. I'm a South African citizen by birth. I was born and brought up at Mtubatuba in the province of KwaZulu-Natal. In the course of these interview proceedings, I will attempt to demonstrate before you that I am a fit and proper person to hold office or to be appointed as in the position of public protector. As an introduction, Madam Chair, my journey in the legal profession began 35 years ago when I obtained a BProc degree and followed it up with an LLB degree at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. I acquired thereafter a certificate in mediation, qualified as a mediator focusing on community conflict dispute resolution. I later obtained a certificate in diplomas and diplomatic training in Zimbabwe in 1992. I served articles of clerkship as a candidate attorney and later admitted as an attorney of the High Court of South Africa. I practiced as an attorney in the KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Division of the High Court of South Africa in Durban for a period of 20 years. In 1999, I was appointed by the University of KwaZulu-Natal as a senior lecturer in the Department of Private Law in the Faculty of Law, lecturing in areas such as jurisprudence, general principles of contract, advanced delict, African customary law. I was in academia as a senior lecturer for 1 year. In 2002, I approached the High Court and applied for admission as an advocate of the High Court of South Africa. I was admitted as such and practiced as an advocate and a member of the Durban Bar for more than 10 years. In 2007, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development as an acting judge in the Eastern Cape Division of the High Court of South Africa from 2007 to 2013. In 2011, I was nominated for a position of a judge in the Electoral Court. I appeared before the Judicial Service Commission, interviewed, and on the recommendations of the Judicial Service Commission, His Excellency the President appointed me to a position of a judge in the Electoral Court. That is where I currently serve. Before I touch on matters more pertinent to the position of public protector, I would like to touch on additional training in other fields of study. In 1984, I was awarded a scholarship by the United States government in conjunction with what is known as Operation Crossroads Africa to study American legal institutions and jurisprudence in the United States. In March 1993, I was awarded a scholarship to undertake diplomas and diplomatic training, which was sponsored by the Commonwealth of Nations in Zimbabwe. In November 1995, I was awarded a scholarship by the Kellogg Foundation based in D.C. in Washington to attend and participate in training on leadership based on the concept of, on the theme, Concepts and Challenges of Leadership. It was in Salzburg in Austria. In November 1996, I was nominated by the Independent Mediation Service of South Africa for mediation training. I qualified as a mediator, focusing specifically on community conflict dispute resolution. The other nominations I've had is that in 1996, I was nominated as Chancellor and Chairperson of the Governing Council of Adams College of Education in Amanzimtoti. And in March 2000, I was appointed by the Minister of Home Affairs as a member of the Immigration Selection Board. In April 2004, I was appointed by the Independent Electoral Commission as an election observer to observe and monitor the 2004 general elections. The other appointments is that in February 1999, I was appointed by the MEC of Transport as a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Interim Minibus Taxi Tribunal. In December 1998, I was appointed by the MEC for Finance and Development Corporate and Development in KwaZulu-Natal to serve as a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Tender Appeals Tribunal. In 2001, I was appointed by the chairperson of the Broadcasting Monitoring Complaints Committee, the late Advocate Jules Broud, as a member of the Broadcasting Monitoring Complaints Committee. This is a committee of ICASA. As an attorney, I was a member of the KwaZulu-Natal Law Society and a member of the Black Lawyers Association, a member of the Society of Advocates of KwaZulu-Natal, and a member of the Advocates for Transformation. Then in 1987 and again in 1997, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development as a commissioner in the Small Claims Court to decide and determine matters in the Small Claims Court. On the invitation of judges in the KwaZulu-Natal Provincial Division, I've acted as an assessor. In 2005, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice as a magistrate in the regional courts in KwaZulu-Natal. In that position, I sat and decided cases in the following regional court jurisdictional areas. That's Empangeni Regional Court, Durban Regional Court, Harding Regional Court, Kokstad Regional Court, Maluti Regional Court, Bizana and Richards Bay Regional Court. I also presided and decided matters in serious commercial crime court in the regional court. I continued to serve in the regional court as a regional court magistrate until 2007. In January 2007, I was appointed by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development as an acting judge in the Eastern Cape Division of the High Court. I was based in Bisho High Court. And in 2008, I was based as a judge in Mthatha High Court. 2008 again, I was at Mthatha High Court, and in 2010, I was an acting judge.
Sorry, Advocate Matsingwana, you have 2 more minutes to go.
Yeah. In 2009, I was appointed by the Commissioner of South African Revenue Services as chairperson and presiding officer to hear and determine tax appeals in the Tax Appeals Tribunal. in 2011, on the recommendations of the Judicial Service Commission, I was appointed by His Excellency the President as the judge in the Electoral Court. I think I should.
Thank you very much, sir. Honorable members, Honorable Breitenbach, and Honorable Masondo. Oh. Honorable Swart, I'm going to give all of you an opportunity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, sir. I'm Glynis Breitenbach. I'm from the Democratic Alliance. I see in your questionnaire for disclosure of whether you thought that there were any relevant matters which concern your honesty, integrity, and reliability which you should bring to the attention of the committee, you indicated no. Is that correct?
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
In your questionnaire that you filled in for this interview,
yes,
the parliamentary questionnaire, you indicated under the heading, are there any other relevant matters which concern your honesty, integrity and reliability, which you should bring to the attention of the committee, you indicated no. Is that correct?
Which question? What number of the question? Yes, I see that.
It is the
last. We explained. Just hold on, Honorable Breitenbach. Remember, we sent all nominees a questionnaire.
Yes,
when we acknowledge your receipt of your nomination and acceptance, we then sent you a questionnaire, where you were asked to fill in that questionnaire, and we did spell out that we would be using, that will assist the members to, you know, process the information and to get to know more about you. That's the questionnaire we are talking about. Do you remember that questionnaire?
I remember the questionnaire.
Thank you, sir. Can you then respond to that question?
The paragraph that I'm referring to, sir, is on the last page, page 8. And it is question number 3.5,
question,
right at the back of the questionnaire.
Question number 5.
3.5, on page 8. It's right at the back. You can flip it over.
Yes, I do, yes.
You see it? And you indicated no. Is that correct? Do you see that? You indicated no.
Yes, I indicated no, yes.
And you stand by that answer?
Say it again.
Do you stand by that answer?
Yes, I do stand by this answer.
Okay. Is it correct, sir, that you have two civil judgments against you, one in favor of Nedbank and one in favor of the South African Revenue Services for quite significant amounts?
I don't know why I can't hear you.
I also don't know, sir. Nobody else seems to have that problem.
I wish I could hear you.
Let me just assist you, Advocate Tembu. The member is saying, first of all, she wanted to confirm if you had said when you were given an opportunity in the questionnaire, you wanted, you had to disclose if there are any matters that you would like to disclose. In the questionnaire, you said no. Now, then the member is asking you, do you then stand by your statement in the light of the fact that there is a matter which involves yourself and Nedbank Limited and involving a certain amount, and there is also another matter on the South African Revenue Service? And I think, member, that's what you wanted to know.
Yes, the judgments. Civil judgments against,
yes,
you. Is that correct?
The matter involving the Revenue Services, unfortunately, I don't know that matter. I don't know what matter is it you're referring to. I've never had any relationship with the Revenue Services except the relationship of being a taxpayer.
Yes, well, that's the major relationship that we all have with the Revenue Services. It's a rather unfortunate one, but that's just how it is.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I have to deny that there's any problem between me and the receiver of revenue.
and the civil judgment against you in favor of Nedbank?
The Nedbank, I remember I had a loan. I took a bond with Nedbank. I failed to service the loan, and they repossessed a building.
And so there is a civil judgment against you in favor of Nedbank?
Say that again, ma'am, please.
There is a civil judgment against you in favor of Nedbank?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. You also set out in your in the same questionnaire in paragraph 3.3.
3.3,
on page 7.
Yes, ma'am.
Your history some 27 years ago of where you were found to have found guilty of unprofessional conduct. You disclosed that. Do you agree?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Now, some of that was also a failure to reply to correspondence, a failure to pay fines levied by the society, double booking, and a failure to pay your subscription fees. So you'll agree with me that you have a history of ignoring your financial commitments.
Let me give a context to what you are reading, ma'am. Life is a journey. And in this journey, we make mistakes. And in this journey, we must learn from those mistakes. Some 27 years ago, in 1989, was suspended as an attorney for negligent and unprofessional conduct. The conduct being that I failed to pay to reply to correspondence. Failure to reply to correspondence on time. And failure to pay fines levied by the society. I took over an office which was run by Judge Mtiane when he went to the bar. I felt at the time I had the capacity to run that practice. It became clear that I was young and I did not have the capacity to run a large practice. So these mistakes occurred. I was taken to court. The Law Society wanted to strike me off. But the two judges, it was Judge Didcon and Judge Wilson, they said, no, there's nothing on the papers to show that I'm a dishonest person who deserves to be struck off. So I was suspended for 9 months. And because of the trivial nature of the offense, the operation of the suspension was suspended by Judge Didcot and Judge Wilson. So there is nothing in this in this form of negligence, which indicate that one is a dishonest person who needs to be struck off as an attorney. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. That certainly puts it in context. Can you just tell me the Nedbank judgment? Have you repaid that amount?
I can't hear you.
The Nedbank judgment, sir. Have you repaid the amount?
I am in the process of negotiating with Nedbank to repay the amount.
When was the judgment taken against you?
The judgment was taken, I think it was last year.
Thank you.
This, if I may add, when I applied to be admitted as an advocate, I made this disclosure to the court. Both the Law Society and the Society of Advocates did not object to my admission as an advocate. When I appeared before the Judicial Service Commission, when I made myself available for the position as a judge, I made this disclosure because I felt this disclosure is important so that decisions that are taken are taken. In fact, it indicates a mark of honesty to disclose whatever is there.
Then I must ask you, sir, why you didn't disclose it to this committee?
I beg yours?
Then I must ask you why you didn't disclose it to this committee.
Well, I disclosed it in this form at 3.3.
No, you didn't disclose the Nedbank judgment at 3.5.
There is nothing in this form which indicates that disclose judgments against you, civil judgments against you.
You're an admitted advocate. You've sat as a judge. And that's your answer to my question.
I'm saying there is nothing in this form.
That's a sufficient answer. Thank you.
Which specifically says you need to...
Advocate Mtembo, I think you have answered the question you have been asked. Is there any other question, members? Honorable Masondo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are really two questions I wish to pose to the advocate.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Amos Nkosiyake Masondo. A member of this committee. The two questions, Chairperson, relate to the knowledge and skills as well as to the whole matter of intergovernmental relations. On the first questions, if the advocate can briefly tell us why and how he thinks his academic record and his skills are in themselves a recommendation to serve in the office of the public protector. In other words, how relevant is your knowledge and skills in relation to the position? And the latter part of the question really seeks to find out if the advocate has any comment to make with regard to the intergovernmental relations and how this can impact positively or otherwise on the role of the Office of the Public Protector.
Thank you, Bob Masson. Thank you, sir. The job of Public Protector enables one to make a major and profound impact, not only in the protection of human rights, but also in the prevention of the abuse of rights and interests of ordinary individuals by public officials. We say the Office of Public Protector strengthens and protects our constitutional democracy. In essence, I think that I understand that to mean the Public Protector has a mandate to protect ordinary individuals from abuse of power by public officials. In other words, protecting the individuals against the might of the state. For those of us who have a commanding passion in the area of human rights, one would like to serve in that capacity that would enable one to make a profound intervention, advance human rights, and actually protect individuals from the abuse of power by public officials. That is therefore why I decided to make myself available.
Thank you. Honorable Maesela, then it's going to be... it's going to be... Oh, you have a follow-up?
No, I just want to find out if he wants to comment as well on the intergovernmental relations.
Do you have anything to add on intergovernmental relations, Advocate?
The duty of the Public Protector is really to investigate, report, and then take appropriate remedial measures or action regarding the impropriety that may occur in all the spheres of government. I do not have anything to add to in particular about intergovernmental relations and the role of the public protector, except to say that all the literature one reads about the public protector seem to indicate that the public protector is the watchdog. The words that normally comes, I think they are taken from what was said by a satirist called Juvenal, who said, quis custodiet ipsos custodiet, literally translated meaning, who guards the guard, who protects, who guards the guard, who watches the watchman. More prosaical, I think that means, who protects the rights of the ordinary individuals from abuse by public officials? That is what I think is the role of the public protector.
Okay, thank you. You are going to go in this order. Honorable Maisela, then Honorable Swart, then Honorable Shivambu, and Honorable Mwabe, and I will take you in the next round. I'll start with you, Honorable Tsege, then you, Honorable Van Damme. But if you can go in that order, can I request you, Advocate, because of time, to please listen carefully to questions and write them down, because I'm going to allow members to ask questions, each one of them, in this first round that I've just said now. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Dr. Maisela. I'm a member of this committee. Advocate, would you please analyze for this committee the significance of the public protector being designated as a Chapter 9 institution in terms of the historical underpinnings, current priorities, and its contribution to the building of a national democratic society. And given that the Office of the Public Protector is there to assist the state in improving on its constitutional obligations, how would you analyze the role of the Office of the Public Protector in enhancing the objectives of the developmental state? Thank you.
Can I ask Honorable Swart to come in?
Thank you, Chair. The name is Steve Swart, a member of this committee. Thank you, Advocate. One of the main challenges facing the Office of the Public Protector relates to financial constraints. How would you deal with the financial constraints that the office is dealing with, considering that following the recent Constitutional Court judgment, there will be many decisions of the public protector taken on review to court? That's the first issue. Secondly, what is your management experience, your management skills? And how would you, do you have experience to run a large office? Have you ever run a large office? We've got a staff management of 369 members. So what is your management skills? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I see that the advocate was admitted as an attorney in 1981 and was a judge in a small claims court in 1987. And the 80s were mostly a period of the struggles against apartheid, heightened struggles against apartheid. What was your role in the struggle against apartheid? Did you play any role in opposing apartheid? Were you affiliated to any organization of the organizations that fought against apartheid? That is one. Number two, What is your understanding of the relationship between the Public Protector's Office and Parliament? There was a long discourse that we held last year around the relationship between the Public Protector's Office and Parliament. What do you think is the relationship between the two institutions? Does the other report to the other? What happens? So you must be able to give. And lastly, I want you to give me your understanding of the Executive Members Ethics Act, because it gives provisions of the role of a public protector in the Executive Members Ethics Act. I'm sure that if you had applied or you have accepted the nomination of being a public protector, you are familiar with what that is and how do we best implement the Executive Members Ethics Act. So you must speak to that. Those are three issues I want to talk to.
Okay, members, can you respond on those questions? I'm just worried that the questions are a bit long and maybe you may get confused in the process.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The question by the last member calls upon me to state my role in the struggle. My role in the struggle for the liberation of the country. Of course, during those days of the struggle, I was at university. So a student at university can play a role that is limited by the circumstance of being at university. One, we had leaders then who led the students, prominent being Steve Biko, and the other one was Pani Pichana, and many others. The only organization that assisted students at the time was SASO, South African Students Organization, which broke away from NUSAS. I think I played a role limited by the circumstances I was in. When I started to do articles as an attorney, I served under a man, Judge Mtiane, who practiced with Griffiths Mklange. The role that was played by the people who we considered as pioneers, they were involved with communities. Mr. Mklange in particular, and his wife Victoria Mklange, were involved in mobilizing communities in various ways. I can't start now detailing what they did, but they're mobilizing society to stand up and fight against the oppression that was there.
On Advocate Mtembu, I don't know if Honorable Shivambu is with you, but I wanted to say to you, maybe just try to be crisp with your responses. I think that aspect of your involvement in the apartheid, I'm not sure. I think he has dealt with it. But the one on the ethics, Members' Ethics, Executive Ethics Act, probably you may want to speak on that because you have other questions that were asked by Honorable Maisela and Honorable Swar, and all of them, they require some responses.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam.
Just quickly, Chair. Yeah, just quickly. I wanted to understand the advocate's role, not the role of Steve Biko and Benny Pichane and Griffith Mtenge. Your role, what did you do in the struggle against apartheid? Because you're speaking about others, I want to know your role. What did you participate in any movement? Did you engage in any struggle against apartheid? Thank you.
I did say, sir, that I was a member of SASO, South African Students Organization. Our circumstances in participating in the struggle was limited by the circumstances of us being students, being at university. Personally, if I'm not answering you, you will excuse me, but I think I participated not only in demonstrations, but the role of a student is only limited by the circumstances a student finds in.
Honorable Advocate Tembo, if you could proceed to the next question. I am not rushing you, sir, but I'm not sure. I beg your indulgence, Honorable Shivambo. I think that question is important, but not as relevant now. I would like him to move to the next one, because that one, to me, is more relevant, especially to this this process.
Thank you, Chair. The Executive Members Ethics Act 82 of 1998 provide for a code of ethics governing the conduct of members of the cabinet, deputy ministers and MECs, and it provides for matters connected therewith. The code of ethics, I think, is section 2, subsection 1, if I'm correct, provides that the president must, after consultation with parliament, by proclamation in the Gazette, publish a code of ethics prescribing standards and rules aimed at promoting open, democratic, and accountable government with which cabinet members, deputy ministers, and MECs must comply in the performance of their work. It also provides for that at all times they should act in good faith and in the best interest of good governance to meet all obligations imposed on them by law. And specifically, it mentions things like they must not undertake any other paid work, acting in a way that is inconsistent with their office, or exposing themselves in a situation involving a risk of conflict between their official responsibilities and private interest. Goes on to...
I'm going to be interjecting, especially if the answers are long, and I think we get the gist of what Advocate is trying to tell us. There is another question from Fam Shivambo, which I also want you to respond to very quickly. If you can be crisp, the one on the relationship between the public protector and parliament.
I think that question refers to the ambit of the independence of the public protector. I think the public protector must be independent and subject only to the National Assembly. The institution of public protector must satisfy certain criteria. The first and most important, I think, is the criteria that he must be independent from the administrative authority that fall within its jurisdiction. He must be a referee. Is referred to in most literature as a referee, neither for nor against. Complaints would be coming to the public protector about what government officials are doing. And he must not be seen to be someone who is not impartial. A public protector who is partial in protecting the interest of government is not a public protector that South Africa needs. I think South Africa needs a public protector who can speak to authority and say, this is the law. I don't know whether I'm asking the member.
No, it's okay. I'm not satisfied, but it's okay. Yeah. We'll deal with it on a different process.
Okay, no problem. I think the members have heard you on that question. Can you also move next to the next question? There is a question from Honorable Swart on the financial position of the Office of the Public Protector. Essentially, that's what the question is about. That's from Honorable Swart. Can you respond to that quickly?
Yes. Honorable Swart indicated to me that whether do I have management skills to run an office that is meant by about 389, that is the figure quoted, if I'm correct, 389 people. Well, I do have the management skill. Of course, an attorney's practice becomes a matter of 10, 11, 12 people. But management skill does not mean that you personally are running everything. Delegation is part of a management skill where you are able to identify the appropriate people to task for a particular task and as to the financial skill, before one qualified as an attorney, one is required to enjoy an examination on accounting. That would sharpen your skills on financial management. That is before one is admitted as an attorney. And I think I have. Yes.
Swart.
I appreciate your skills, but maybe my question was more related to the budgetary shortfall in the office. And should you be appointed the public protector, how would you deal with the budget shortfall in the office? How would you resolve that issue, which is a major concern at the moment?
The issue of budget and budgeting in the public protector, I don't know if I hear the question well, but regarding running a budget of an institution like a public protector, I think it doesn't take someone not to learn how to run. If you have knowledge of accounting, and if you have been trained, I think one will not be in a position to fail to run an office of the public protector, the budget in that office.
Honorable Swart, I know you are probably expecting a different outcome. Would you still want to ask the question, or would you rather leave it at that?
In due to time constraints, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Chair.
Who else it was? Now, Honorable Van Damme, I'm taking the... Honorable Ngwabe, then Honorable Van Damme, and Honorable Tseke, and Honorable Matapo. All of you, or finally, Honorable Msimang, and you are going, okay, Honorable Pongo, please follow each other like that, and I'm not going to take any more questions on that one.
Sorry, Chair, just as far as time is concerned.
How
are we doing
With time, we are not doing very well. We have 9 minutes more left. I mean, not 9 minutes. We are going to, we started at 8:08, so we are now standing at 8:52, so we have 16 more minutes. So I would really request the members, if they can ask their questions, if they can be not be so winded, you know? Yes, Honorable Mwabe? Oh, before that.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, my apology, Honorable Mayisela. There was a question from Honorable Mayisela. I think the question centered around the National Democratic Society and the role of the public protector. Am I paraphrasing your question correctly? That was the question. Would you like to just quickly answer that one, sir?
I think I didn't record the question. If you may repeat the question for me.
Honorable Mayisela, can you be crisp in your rephrasing of the question, please?
I just want you to analyze in your own way the public protectors being designated Chapter 9 and its role in building the National Democratic Society, and as well as a public protectors enhancing the objectives of the developmental state.
Would you like us to take other questions and you can respond to it once you've had other questions and you can respond
Thank
to them all in
Thank
all
you, ma'am.
Together?
Thank you, ma'am.
Would you like to respond now? Or you want me to take other questions?
You may take other questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Mwabe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, for the very rare opportunity for one to interview the judge and question the judge. Judge Mthembu, good morning. My question is very simple to you. My name is Busuk Mwabe. I just want to know, in your own view, what are the current challenges or risks facing the public protector or the office of the public protector? And in your own view, what should be done to address those challenges and risks, taking into consideration the recent constitutional judgment delivered by Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Van Dam.
Thanks, Chair. Advocate Mthembu, I'll try to be quite crisp in my questioning. My first question, Honorable Shivambu here asked, what your contribution was during apartheid. I'd just like to know whether your political affiliation, so do you belong, are you a member of any political party? Have you been an office bearer for any political party? My second question is about your investigative experience. So you've got an illustrious career, I think, as a presiding officer in various courts, but I don't see any real investigative experience. So do you think you have the skills required to investigate matters that are reported to the public protector if you are appointed to the office? So do you feel you have enough investigative experience? And then my third question, the findings of the public protector, do you believe those findings to be legally binding or to be recommendations? Thank you.
Okay. Next member, Honorable Teke.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Advocate Mthembu. My name is Grace Teke. I'm also the member of this committee. Just to put you at ease, my question is very simple. The Office of the Public Protector, it's the voice of the voiceless. It's representing the poor of the poorest. And in view of bringing the government closer to the people, if you are appointed as the public protector, how are you going to make sure that your provincial offices, remember we've got provincial and regional offices, how are you going to make sure that those offices are strengthened or capacitated? And how would you make sure that there's a transfer of skills from national to local? And my second question, it's a complaint and an allegation of financial impropriety against a public office bearer of the national legislative arm of the state is brought before the Office of the Public Protector. How would you respond to such a complaint? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Moramadi Mutapo is my name. Good morning, Advocate.
Thank you. Good morning, ma'am.
Yes. My questions are based on integrity, propriety, fitness to hold office of public protector. I've got only two questions. The post of public protector requires a high degree of integrity, Advocate, best defined by the characteristics of honesty, principle, honor, reputability, truthfulness, trustworthiness, incorruptibility, and uprightness. How have those with whom you associate at work been able to attribute these characteristics to you? And can you also give examples? Secondly, on the issue, same issue of integrity, is there anything historically that impedes the panel in coming to a decision on the fitness and integrity of yourself to hold the office of public protector? And if so, what are the details? You got the questions, isn't it?
Yes, I had the questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Pongo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I think mine flows from what Honorable Shivambu asked earlier about the independence of the office. I want you to share with this committee on what constitutes this independence of the Public Protector's Office. And by way of an example, how would you apply this independence in making recommendations? That is the first one, Chair. The second one, it relates to the fact that this committee at the end of the day is expected to objectively assess whether you are fit and proper for the post. And in discharging some of your duties, you'll have to act without fear or favor. So share with the committee what is your understanding of what of fear, without fear or favor. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And finally, Honorable Msimang.
Then thank you, Honorable Chair. In a way, my question is related to the financial question asked by Honorable Swart. And I take you, Advocate, back to the disclosure about the judgment against you. In responding to that question, you informed this committee that when you took over the office of Mr. Justice Mtiane, you thought that you were financially capacitated to maintain that office, only to find that that did not become reality. Now, you went further to say this practice is a journey, so you were still in a growing phase or a growing curve. Now I want to know whether you are fully grown to be able to manage financially the office of the public protector, reminding you that you said the judgment was handed down last year, and also reminding you that you had done an accountancy course and you passed it in order to be admitted as an attorney. And you practiced for 20 years. So I'm just concerned about the capacity since last year. Does it enable you to run the office of the public protector? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Mtembu. You have 8 minutes to respond, and I would also remind you that one of the key attributes of this position is communication skills.
Thank you.
And understanding how best to communicate within a very tight timeline. Thank you.
One of the questions asked by the member relates to fitness and propriety, because the position requires someone who is fit and proper. Fit and proper in the context, I think, is just a value judgment which is attributed to a person of good standing, reliable, dependable, someone who bears values such as honesty, trustworthy, reliable, and integrity. It must be a person of good personal character, good moral character, good moral judgment, and a person who can be trusted and who is trustworthy. That is what I think the position requires. It's a requirement for this position. The other question was whether I do have investigative skills. As I had indicated, I have set as, I think the members do have my CV, which indicates there is a, I want to refer members to a portion in the CV which deals with my, sorry. It's an aspect that deals with what the member is asking. You'll excuse me, I'm paging through. My CV indicates that I have set as in commissions. I've sat as chairperson of a one-person commission of inquiry into problems experienced in the Department of Health at Amajuba District in KwaZulu-Natal. Sat as chairperson and commissioner in the commission of inquiry relating to the appointment and of the municipal manager of Msunduzi Municipality. Was commissioned by the Department of Health as chairperson of one-person commission of inquiry to look into irregularities, corruption allegedly committed at Mkungundlovu College of Further Education and Training in the award of tenders. Set as the presiding officer in an internal disciplinary inquiry into the misconduct committed by officials in the Department of Education. I've sat and continue to sit as the presiding officer to adjudicate, resolve disputes, objections, complaints, queries, and appeals relating to the award of tenders by Umgeni Municipality in terms of its supply chain management policy. And again, same.
Advocate, sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You are reading what is in your CV, and I think the members have the CVs. I'm not sure if you would like to just answer the question without necessarily going through your CV word for word, because we have the CV. We've read your CV.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was about investigative skills. I was trying to demonstrate to the committee that I have had the experience of investigating large corporations, municipalities, who do thousands and thousands of tenders. And I've decided on them. And some were taken to court, some were confirmed, some were set aside by the court. So I have, in fact, had the opportunity to investigate large institutions.
Another question, because we are responding to Honorable Van Damme, she just wanted one answer. Your political affiliation, sir, currently?
I discontinued affiliation when the Minister of Justice in 2007 appointed me to a position as a judge, acting judge in the Eastern Cape Division of the High Court. I consulted senior judges, and out of that consultation, it became clear to me that I must dissociate myself with political parties. I dissociated myself in 2007 with political parties. I must be honest and say I was a member of the ANC, but when the judge president appointed me to this position, I consulted senior judges, and then out of that consultation, I dissociated myself with political parties. I'm no longer a member of any political party as it stands.
I think you've answered that question. Are you happy? He's answered the question.
Yes. I think I asked what I think is quite a relevant question. The findings of the public protector, do you think they are legally binding or recommendations? You can just give me a one-word answer. I'll be satisfied with that.
Well, I think our courts have pronounced on that. Our courts have pronounced on that. There was first the Western Cape Division of the High Court, which said they are binding. And then the matter was taken up to the Supreme Court of Appeals, if I'm not mistaken, or the Constitutional Court, which said the decisions of the public protector are binding unless set aside by a... I don't know whether my view would matter in a matter where the Constitutional Court has pronounced itself, but if you want my view, I think the decisions of the public protector should be binding until set aside by a court of law.
Thank you. I think that's a sufficient response, Honorable Van Damme. Can you move on to the next question?
No, whilst talking about the binding effect of these decisions, if I may go on, Madam Chair, I don't know whether the Public Protector Act shouldn't be amended. I'm happy this opportunity has come to me to talk to the legislators, people who make the law, whether the Public Protector Act should be amended so as to give the Office of Public Protector teeth to bite. I know that in the Constitution, maybe the founding fathers didn't want to overregulate in the Constitution. All the Chapter 9 institutions don't have teeth. If I may make an example, if the public protector makes a remedial measure that, for an example, a municipal manager A must repay the funds, money taken from the municipality. If the municipal manager says is not prepared to pay, in my view, as the law currently stands, that is the end of the matter. There's nothing that happens. But if these legislators I see here were to pilot an amendment which would give effect to the remedial measures of the public protector.
Okay, Advocate, you only have 1 more minute to sum up your responses.
Thank you. To summarize, Madam Chair, I thank the members for the opportunity to allow me to be here. In summarizing, I may repeat myself. The members will bear with me. I have been fortunate to be afforded by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development to serve my people as a commissioner in the Small Claims Court, where you serve citizen A who owes citizen B a small amount of 200 rand or 300 rand. That is where justice is. For 10 years, the minister appointed me to the position. I did it for the first year and again for the next 5 years. So for 10 years. And I was appointed by the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development in the Regional Court. I served in various Regional Court divisions in KwaZulu-Natal. I served as an attorney for over 20 years. I served as an advocate for over 10 years. I was a senior lecturer producing lawyers at university who are serving society. I served as a judge in the Tax Appeals Tribunal in the Eastern Cape as a judge. I'm submitting that it is on the basis of these experiences that I need to be judged and my service to society. I submit to you that I am an ideal and suitable candidate for appointment to the position of public protector. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. I think that concludes our interview with you, Advocate. You shall hear from us in due course.
Thank you very much for your time, sir. Madam Chair. Madam Chair.